Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Freaking first cut. Golly.
Welcome into the first cut, our RBC Heritage DFS preview. It's a lot of letters. Sia Najad joining me to break it all down. Sia, what up?
It's a lot of letters, and it's fully integrated into my narrative lineup at the end of the show. So stay tuned for that, if nothing else.
I have a guest already. Greg Ducharme is here. Greg, the Masters is over. We do not look back. We look forward here at the first cut.
That's exactly what we do. And the schedule rolls on, and we roll right along with it because every week is an opportunity in fantasy golf.
Here's Sia Najad's narrative lineup. Dustin Johnson, Matt Kuchar, Chris Kirk, these are the RBC hair, the RBC sponsored guys, right? Did I spoil the
Snedeker?
No, you're not even close, actually. Although the lineup you just gave out would be way better than the one I'm going to give out. But I've got like a two-tiered narrative lineup where there's like a star of the narrative lineup. So this could be, and actually, I'm just going to go ahead and say it. I'm not going to say the lineup. I'm just going to say this statement, which is out of control. There's one player in this field, strokes gain narrative, that literally breaks the model. He is the highest score in the strokes gain narrative department. Unfortunately, he's in the 6K, but it doesn't matter because strokes gain narrative take precedent over everything else. So I'm just saying, stay tuned.
Oh, boy. Now it's going to be on my brain for the next 45 minutes.
Every guy we go through, is this the narrative? Is this the guy? Is this it?
Speaking of the guy that you might want to pick for one and done purposes. And when I say you, I mean the fan vote is now open. The link is in the description of this video and podcast. So go ahead, click on that. Shout out Elijah. Much appreciated for putting it all together. They have made a pretty serious dent. See, I don't know their exact standing at the moment. They might be in fourth already. I'm in the rear view. You're in the rear view. Greg, are you in the rear view? Have they passed you yet?
Yeah, they passed me. I think they're ahead of me right now. It's close. They're close to me, but
I was really disappointed because the truth is I wanted to take JT last week, which honestly wasn't that big of a gap from DJ, but a big enough gap for me. I had already used JT, so I couldn't use him. I had to use DJ, and I was a little disappointed. Rick, we were on Friday. Actually, Greg and Rick, we were all on Friday, and I was kind of talking smack a little bit about JT's position relative to DJ's, and that flipped quickly.
Yeah.
Dude, there was and then JT played the front nine on Sunday. I said we look forward, but apparently we do indeed look back. I saw JT on Sunday, his front nine, and I think DJ had made a double somewhere, and there was like a four-shot lead, and JT was just like a shot off of second, and I'm like, holy crap, give me this T2 money, and then he made, I think he went bogey, bogey, double on 10, 11, 12, I think, and it was just all she wrote.
Yikes. Yeah, not cool.
Not great, Bob. All right.
I'm done with JT. We got to move on.
Moving on. Well, he's in the field this week. Justin Thomas, indeed, in the field this week at Harbor Town, RBC Heritage. That, what you're seeing on YouTube right now, is my website, rickrungood.com, the course key stats tool. And there's a lot going on here. See, I guess let's talk about the field first. We do have a bunch of guys coming from the Masters to play this event, and this field, longer term, has seen a real improvement in strength of field. I think it was 419 the last time I checked, which is right on par for what we've seen the last couple of years. Minus 2020, this was one of the first events back, and it was like a major championship field in 2020. But this has been seemingly every year getting us to get some really decent players the week after the Masters.
Yeah, and it's a little surprising. You would think, and I know it's just down the road a little bit, but you'd think some of these guys would sort of take the tournament off after the Masters. This will be a really good test of the narrative that we continue to hear about the RBC, which is, you know, some of these long shot guys, maybe in the 60 to 1 or the 100 to 1 range, maybe these guys that are priced firmly in that 7K range. It'll be a real test to see if those guys end up emerging, you know, in the top five as an outright, because there's a lot of talent at the top. I mean, really, even when you go to the bottom of the 9K range, that's where the real elite talent stops. So I'll be really interested to see who's contending down the stretch among the 9 and 10K guys and the guys below them.
Slot course here, Greg. I'd argue Harbortown, one of the more unique courses on the PGA Tour, does not necessarily require distance, more of an accuracy game with tree-lined fairways, some of the smallest greens on the schedule. What else do we look for around this track?
Yeah, a positional golf course. And the accuracy thing is really interesting. What type of player has the ability to get the ball in play off the tee? And that's all. And then who are the great iron players who can do that? And so I think when you mix this stronger field and you start to mix the best players in the world at a golf course like this, the two strategies don't always align. And so that's why I think it'll really test the narrative, as Sia says, of what typically does well here and what typically does well on the PGA Tour. And it makes for a fascinating conversation and discussion and fascinating decisions when it comes to your DFS lineup. So, I mean, you think of a guy like Patrick Cantlay. Well, he may not be the most accurate week to week on the PGA Tour, but if he's throttling back off the tee to get the ball in position, because it's a positional golf course off the tee, especially, can he get the ball in play enough? Is he inaccurate in normal events because distance is favored and it's an advantage and you're trying to get it out there as far as you can? Or, and I'm just using Patrick Cantlay as an example, but is he a guy who can, when he throttles back, get it in play because that's what the golf course is asking for? So I can't wait to break all that down.
Yeah, kind of atypical course, not a space typical, atypical all
right
word type of golf course, Sia, because generally speaking, the better players hit it further. Very generally speaking, but we know that shorter, more accurate golfers are very live this week, and it's created a situation where we've seen some long shot winners. Stewart Cink last year was 100 to 1. CT Pan in 2019 was 125. Satoshi Kodaira in 2018 was 250 to 1. So it really is a golf course that I believe opens itself up to a lot of potential victors.
Our good friend Satoshi. That's great to hear that. So, yeah, and that's why when you're looking at the ranges, especially when you go to the 7K range, I'm telling you, and not you, Rick, I'm telling everybody, you're going to like everyone. There are so many guys to like, and it's because now we have everybody kind of in play here. I was just, you know, looking at the 7K range saying, I'm going to have to X out, you know, 5 or 50% of the guys I like, if not more, because there's just so many that I like. So when you bring all of those people into play, it does almost kind of make it harder. You're just going to have to take some stands, make some decisions, and not play guys that you would ordinarily, you know, like to play at this tournament. I mean, just you can't play them all.
Take some stands, make some decisions. We're going to do that by starting with the $10,000 range. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there
there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Oh, and we're back. And we are looking at the cheat sheet because there are five golfers over $10,000. Justin Thomas back in action, 11,100. Cam Smith, 10,800. Dustin Johnson, 10,500. Colin Morikawa is 10,200. And an even $10,000 for Patrick Cantlay. Greg, I'll start with you. Every single golfer priced $8,400 or more played last week. So we've got that going for us. But the top five are the big boys. What do we do?
Well, there's a couple guys that are really interesting in this range. What Cam Smith, you would think this could be a course he excels at because he's a great iron player, great short game and putter. So the small greens you would think would benefit him. Driving accuracy is a concern out here. And also the emotional defeat of last week, I think, could also be a concern. But it's probably a good idea for him to play to move forward and kind of clear the slate with that. But JT is the really interesting guy in this range because there's a clear favorite here to me. That's not Justin Thomas. The guy that just stands out as this should be a great week for him is Colin Morikawa. You have the round that he played that was a blast. I mean, that group with Rory must have been so much fun to play in. But then you just combine that with this year that he's had. And if you look at just the PGA Tour and you take out the Players' Championship, which had some crazy weather, and the Valspar, and he's finished in the top 10 in every event in 2022, every event in the wraparound season as well. So it's been a great year for him so far, and the golf course should fit. He's extremely accurate off the tee, and he is one of the best iron players, if not the best iron player in the game. Those two things are really important. It's like this course is built for Colin Morikawa. And then you look at his history here. It's short, as it is everywhere, but tied seventh last year. So Colin Morikawa looks like the guy. But Sia, do you think he's going to be extremely popular?
I wouldn't say extremely popular. I think he's going to be popular, but there are so many good decisions to be made in this top range that it's not like he's going to suck up all the ownership here. You can make an argument literally for every single person in this range. And I actually think across the board, because everybody's in play, you're going to see some popular guys, especially in that 7K, that bargain range. But I don't think there's going to, I don't want to say you don't have to worry about ownership, but I don't think there's going to be more than, you know, one or two guys where you're looking at an eye-popping number from an ownership standpoint. So while I do think Colin, especially off the momentum of what we saw with him and Rory, you know, on Sunday, I definitely think people will want to play him, but I don't think the number is going to be out of control.
Colin Morikawa, 88th in driving distance. So he's not particularly short. He's not particularly long. That's about right in the middle. Ninth in driving accuracy, plays out of the fairway often, which, as we're already identifying, you can't get too far off the beaten path here at Harbortown, or you're going to run into a lot of tree issues. See, I'll bounce this right back to you here. When you start assessing the $10,000 range, how do you see it?
Yeah, again, it's hard to make an argument against any of these guys. I don't think if I was going to make an argument against anybody, unless he's super low owned and a leverage play, I'm not sure I would get to Patrick Cantlay. But again, you can make an argument for him. I totally get it. I do like Morikawa. I like DJ a lot. I feel like DJ is still getting a little unrecognized. The game isn't fully there yet, but I liked what I saw him approach last week in particular. Off the tee was a little questionable. We saw him actually last week club down quite a bit off the tee, which he's going to be doing this week as well. So we'll see what happens with that. But I was encouraged by his approach play. His finishing positions here haven't been outstanding, but they haven't really been bad either. I'm just trying to catch DJ a little bit earlier than everybody else. So he's the one that I'm really focused on. But again, I think Collins a great play. I think JT is a pretty good play. It's probably going to be DJ and Colin for me up here.
Well, let's mine into Patrick Cantlay here, Greg, because I think he's kind of the X factor on the slate. Public sentiment, I don't think is particularly great. 39th at the Masters, did not get out of his group at the match play, missed the cut at the Players from the correct side of the draw, and then a T33 at the Genesis Invitational. That's just four events. You want to look at the four before that? Runner-up, T4, 9th, 4th, go back further than that, two wins. So we're not all that far removed, at least in terms of number of starts, from Patrick Cantlay being super, super elite. And of course, he's got the great history around here, three top 10 finishes in his last four starts. I think he's the X factor on the slate. I don't know how he's going to play, but I think he either wins all the money or loses all the money.
He could be a great pivot. And I have no problem with the option. I think his style of play should really work. And in this stretch where the finishes weren't really great, they were kind of lackluster, his iron play this year has been a little bit of a letdown compared to really hot Patrick Cantlay that we've seen. And that improved last week. At Augusta National, he hit the ball much better, really off the tee and approaching the green. He just struggled on the greens. And there are a lot of people who struggle on those greens. So I think Patrick Cantlay could be a very interesting play, and I have no problem going with him. So the one fear is it's been a little lackluster. Is the fire there this week? Is this a potential week for a ceiling week, a pop week? And it doesn't feel like that, but he's good enough to do it. So that gives me a lot of confidence, and I feel it may be coming. I feel what we saw last week, tee to green, was a big improvement and maybe what we need to get Patrick Cantlay going again. And he's priced for it. I think the price is really fair. You could start a lineup there at 10,000 and you're in really good shape the rest of the way. So I like the Patrick Cantlay play. Probably not as much as Morikawa, but I really like it.
Patrick Cantlay, the Pete Dye specialist. 1.5 strokes gained per round over 69 rounds on Pete Dye golf courses, if you like that type of thing, right up your alley. Okay, Sia, let's put some numbers behind this. Five golfers in the $10,000 range. Please give me your number one, your number two, and your number three.
I'll go, man, you guys are convincing me a little bit with Colin. I'm just going to stick to my guns. I'll go DJ, Colin, Cam Smith.
I'll go Colin, Thomas, Cantlay, Greg.
I'll go Colin, Cantlay.
Nice.
Johnson.
Nobody calls him Johnson.
I know, you've never heard.
I was like, who is that?
I was trying to stick with the last name thing.
I liked it. All right, let's get out to the $9,000 range here. Shane Lowry, $9,800. Corey Connors, $9,700. Daniel Berger, Matt Fitzpatrick, Sung J.M. Rounded out with Jordan Spieth, Joaquin Neiman, Russell Henley. See ya. Oh, boy. There's a lot happening here. There's guys who are playing horribly. There's guys that are playing awesome. There's a little bit of good course history, a little bit of bad course history. It's a grab bag. What do you want to grab?
It's such a great range, and it's furthering the case study of, is it really going to be a long shot that wins this tournament? Because if you asked me, maybe you go Sung J.M. forward versus the field, like in other words, 9,300 and above versus the field. I wonder what that, you know, handicapping number would be, because I kind of like what I see Sung J up and above. It's just, or maybe you start with Joaquin Neiman. I don't know, but I like a lot of these guys. Shane Lowry, I don't know that you could make a cogent argument against Shane Lowry at this point. Like, I don't know that you could just say, like, out loud, like, oh, I just don't like Shane Lowry. I don't see it this week. He has been so good for so long, and especially with the conditions that we might see here, I don't really see that interrupting him very much in terms of how his play has been. So he certainly sticks out to me.
Last 36 rounds for Shane Lowry, gaining 2.02 strokes per round. That is second to only Scottie Scheffler. Now, there are DP World Tour rounds in there, so if you change that to the weighted strokes gained numbers, which take into account strength of field, Shane Lowry is fifth in this field in strokes gained total. over his last 36. It's been an awesome run, Greg. It's been absolutely phenomenal what Lowry's been up to, and he's doing it in a way with the ball striking that is generally sustainable.
It's everything. That's why it's sustainable, right? His driving has been great. His iron play has been fantastic. Short game may be the one area that's been a little weak, but when you're hitting it like he is, it's not a worry. The putting has been great too. So and then you add into that he came and tied ninth here last year, and in 2019 he came and tied third. So he has a very good record here, and I couldn't be higher on Shane Lowry. One thing is, and again, this goes back to the Scottie Scheffler argument. Do you fade him because you think the run's going to end, and because it's the week after a Masters, and maybe it's a letdown week, and last week was emotional for him. You could see it in all the post-round press conferences. Is that a concern? I don't know, but I think he is a little underpriced in this range. But I understand why he's here. I'm not going to say it's a jip, but there's another guy I go to in this range that I think is just way underpriced.
Before we get to that guy, Greg, here's the optimal lineup from last week at the Masters. Scottie Scheffler, the most expensive golfer on the slate, was in it. Cam Smith, obviously in it. Shane Lowry, who we're talking about right now, also in it. And then CO, we rounded this out. Very rare to have three $6,000 golfers in the optimal, but that's what happens when the expensive guys come through. Minwoo Lee was 6,500. Harry Higgs was 63. And Kevin Na was 68. Add it all up, $49,300 got you 500 points, the best possible lineup you could have made.
Yeah, I can't believe Harry Higgs held up at the Masters for 4 days, to be perfectly honest. Like, that one really surprises me. As far as Kevin Na, I know, including myself, a lot of people were off him because they didn't think he had the requisite length. That obviously was an incorrect assessment by myself. As far as Cam Smith, Scottie Scheffler, and Shane Lowry, I guess we can't be surprised there. But that's the ultimate stars and scrubs lineup for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't imagine playing that lineup.
No.
Maybe that's why I haven't selected an optimal lineup. But it's like, how do you... Because the Kevin Na thing, Sia, he played so hard. He had to fight so hard for 4 days. It was brutal for him. Mm-hmm. He was at such a disadvantage out there. And I watched his tape, and it was... Like, I don't fault you for not playing him. I don't think it's a wrong assessment. I don't see how you can predict that kind of success unless you're in his camp and you know he's feeling really good. You know, I don't fault you for that.
Does a camp ever tell you that their guy's not feeling good? Right? it's like preseason football where everybody's in the best shape of their life. Mm-hmm. Everyone's like, he's got a chance this week.
But if you
try to win the Super Bowl,
but if you've personally seen it, you know, if you're out there, you're watching and you're seeing not what they're telling you, what you see. And that's hard to do because you're probably going to still like it every week.
Well, Greg, I'm just take this right back to you because you teased the guy that you liked more. Who was the guy you were referring to over Shane Lowry here?
I just can't believe Matt Fitzpatrick's price. Hmm. I mean, this is the guy that's first on tour in strokes gained total. He has been so good every event since the Players. I mean, 14th, 18th. He didn't get out of a group with the winner, the hardest group. He was in a playoff to get out of the hardest group in the match play. Tied fifth at the Valspar, tied ninth at the API, tied 10th at the Waste Management. And this is tied sixth at the Pebble Beach Pro-Am. This isn't like, there are certain courses that fit him. This guy is playing as good a golf as anybody. And now this course does fit him. It may fit him even better. You look at this history here. He only came and tied fourth last year, tied 14th the year before that. 2 years before that, tied 14th again. I am so intrigued with Matt Fitzpatrick and what he's done. And he is a really, really good option this week.
Does the ceiling matter, Sia? You know, I don't necessarily care about Matt Fitzpatrick's ceiling if he was $8,100, $7,800. He's a staple basically from T8 to T16. Do we worry at all that $9,500, a guy that might be kind of an anchor in your lineup, maybe doesn't win as much on the PGA Tour as we would like to see?
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm worried about with Fitzpatrick, because I like Fitzpatrick just as much as Greg in general terms. I think it matters this tournament, though, because I think there's a lot of potential for guys well below Fitzpatrick's price range to have perhaps more win equity than Matt Fitzpatrick. So I'm not saying I think he's a bad play. Like, this whole 9K range is another range I really like. But when it comes down to it, and when it comes down to me having to select like two or three guys, unfortunately, despite what Greg said, I don't think Matt Fitzpatrick makes the cut for me.
Who does make the cut for you?
All right. So Shane Lowry, of course. Corey Connors is interesting because you almost want to wait and see when does his sort of crash, his momentary crash and burn start as well, because he's been on a nice little hot streak as well. So he's somebody I think he's a great course fit. He's definitely somebody I'm considering, but so far, maybe not among my favorites. I think Daniel Berger is going to be a little popular. I'll tell you what, my model really likes Neiman and Henley. I never play Henley. My model liked Neiman last week. I played him and he did great. My model also liked Henley last week. I did not play him. And this week, I think I might want to come around and play Russell Henley. He just rates out so well in so many metrics, including that approach play that we're looking for, but also in terms of creating opportunities and DK points. He's been stellar across the board there. I think he had a ninth place finish here last year. So it's probably Lowry, maybe Connors, and Russell Henley. I think those are the three I'm liking right now the most.
Russell Henley, literally number one in strokes gained approach this season. He is much more accurate than he is long off the tee. Greg, there's still a couple other names here in the $9,000 range. We've conveniently avoided Jordan Spieth to this point. I don't know if that says something about what we're looking to do this time around.
Well, maybe the missed cut is a good thing for him in this event. And the reason I say that is I look at Corey Connors and he's played a lot of golf, right? You go to the finals of the match play, you play the Valero four rounds there, you play meaningful golf all week at the Masters. It's a little bit extra golf than if he were just playing 4 weeks in a row. With Jordan, you get that rest. Is rest what Jordan really needed? I don't think so, but maybe it's a benefit. I like what he's done tee to green. Even last week, I know the stats aren't great, but if you watch the tape on him, he hit a lot of really quality shots. He just got on the wrong side of some ridges, and he didn't make birdies the way that he typically does. But that his recent form is kind of questionable. So the big thing for me with Jordan is still the short putting. And that's, you can see it in the stats. Strokes gained putting is not good. And he's just giving strokes away from inside of 4 feet. I don't trust that personally. So I'm out on Spieth this week, but it wouldn't surprise me if he had a nice week. I don't think he's anywhere near as reliable as a Matt Fitzpatrick. I don't think he's as reliable as Russell Henley. I think Russell Henley's a better play, even though he's missed a couple of short putts of his own. But I think there are better options in this range than Jordan Spieth.
It's so annoying because he's objectively a pretty bad play, right? I mean, this is a place that if you spray it off the tee, you're going to get in trouble. He doesn't have his best weapon. The putter's been horrendous. I agree that outside of one round, the approach play's been pretty darn good. But like, I don't know if I could pick like a worse spot for Jordan Spieth. And really the only time he's had success here was when he was the number one player in the world and he was having success everywhere. But I'm afraid to be like, Jordan Spieth is terrible. Don't play him. There's still a part of me in the back of my head that is concerned about fading him.
Right. Cause if you're concerned with Fitzpatrick is the ceiling, well, you're never concerned about Spieth's ceiling. He could win any week. I mean, you look at his numbers, take the red block of approach the green at the Masters out. And this guy's striping it. And you add in what you know he can do on the greens and you have a winner, right? That, so the recipe, the formula is right there. I just don't have a lot of faith in it. I think that's a big ask for the putter to all of a sudden get hot. And he, in a way, relies on it. I think it's a good point you make, Rick, about his accuracy off the tee. That's definitely a concern. There have been signs, there have been times when it's been better, but I have my worries with Jordan this week.
to Greg's point, he's actually been, so you're looking at round by round metrics now. That minus 4.5 that he lost on Friday at the Masters is by far his worst in a long time. And he was generally, I mean, he gained on Thursday, basically a stroke to the field. So the approach play has been a lot better than maybe what that even shows. Anything else in the 9K range, or should we move it along, Sia?
I think that's it. I mean, I don't know if we brought up Sung Jae Im, impressive performance last week, but I don't think I'm going to be playing Sung Jae.
All right, let's go down to the $8,000 range. Then we'll find some value in the sevens and the sixes. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
And we're back. $8,000. It's pretty small. See, Simpson, Horschel, Hatton, Harold Varner III, Siwoo Kim. Then we round it out with Alex Noren, Tommy Fleetwood, Kevin Kisner, and Chris Kirk. What's our best way to attack the eights?
There's a couple guys that I like here. I think there's potentially some leverage plays here once ownership starts, you know, making itself known. I mean, I think guys like, you know, Billy Horschel, Harold Varner, maybe even Siwoo, Tommy Fleetwood might carry some lower ownership. But right now, there's only one guy I really like, and there's two guys I'm considering. I really like Alex Noren. I like what he's done here. It hasn't been elite stuff. But then again, Alex Noren's approach play as of late has been elite. I think Alex Noren is one of those guys that, you know, we typically talk about being on the ascent. As we see here, his approach play just over the last couple tournaments has been like substandard for him. Nothing. Like, it's not a disaster, but prior to that, and we talked about him a lot a couple months ago, the approach play was pristine, and we know what he can do with the short game. So put that all together, and at 8,300, we just talked about outright potential. We talked specifically about Matt Fitzpatrick. Now, I'm not saying Noren is a better play than Matt Fitzpatrick. Let's take the prices out of it. I'm just saying, like, from outright potential, I think you could make the argument that Alex Noren on this course has the outright potential that Matt Fitzpatrick does, and yet you're getting him at 8,300. I just really like this play.
Yeah, Alex Noren, and there's a guy we could talk about in a bit. We've been tracking like these gains on approach, and Alex Noren certainly in that category. He's got three top 28s in his three trips here, but I'd argue he's playing better leading in this week than any of those previous weeks. Okay, Greg, what else do we see here in this $8,000 range?
Well, Webb Simpson's hard to look past because of his history. Yeah. So I don't think we can go without talking about Webb. I'm not overly enamored with his performance so far this year, but I feel like it's trying to get better. And I like that he's played a little bit now. It seems like maybe there's a little bit more of a rhythm and he's going to find something. And this could be a get right week for Webb. So I have a hard time just looking past that. I love Noren, as Sia said. I really like Chris Kirk as well. Chris Kirk has been striping the ball this year. Mm-hmm. And he also has played pretty well here, especially in his last start. He was tied seventh last year when he played here, which was his best finish here by a significant margin. I mean, he has a couple of other reasonable finishes, but he could be interesting. He didn't play the Masters. Maybe some people kind of are scared away because of that. So I do find him to be rather interesting. I'm also, I'm so hesitant to say this, but I like what I've seen out of Tommy Fleetwood. And I'm wondering if Tommy Fleetwood is, who has a tied 25th here. I'm wondering if Tommy Fleetwood is coming back to Tommy Fleetwood form. He's gained strokes on the greens, right? His biggest weakness, if you will, in what, 6 of 7, something like that.
At least 5 of 6. Yeah.
5 of 6, it's 5 of 6. So the putter has been great for him. And I think the ball striking starting to come around. So he might be, and this is old Tommy Fleetwood, very accurate off the tee, very good iron player and putting well. And that's a great recipe.
Yeah, it's really the best stat profile we've seen from Tommy since probably before COVID, honestly.
So and at that point, he's way underpriced.
Yeah, he finished third at the Honda, 2 weeks before everything shut down. And he was really never the same, at least in the advanced metrics. Since then, what he's showing right now much more resembles the early 2020 stuff.
Yeah, and so that piques my interest because I'm wondering, is there some value there? So I really like this range. I like this 8K range. I think with Fleetwood, with Kirk, Kisner's playing some good golf. Noren looks so good. He looks like the guy. But I think there's hidden value with Tommy Fleetwood.
The only two golfers $8,000 and up that did not play last week: Alex Noren, Chris Kirk. Sia, do we care one way or another about whether somebody played last week?
No, I don't think so. Not unless we saw something that would, sound the alarm bells. I think all of these guys are in play.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. There's always the argument.
What do you like in this range, Rick?
So I have zero idea what to do with Webb. Quite honestly, I agree that it's like maybe getting better and it's elite course history. And if we just play web on web courses, this is one of them. I would prefer Noren. I would prefer probably Siwoo Kim as like a high risk, high reward option. And then I also agree with the sentiment around this is the best we've seen Tommy in a long time, which is scary. It's super scary, but this is the best we've seen him.
So I want to ask you a little about the Siwoo Kim, the high risk, high reward, because he's great at die courses, right? Yep. This is like auto one and done play territory for Kyle Porter. When you build a lineup with Siwoo in it, are you more interested in would Matt Fitzpatrick be a more, would that be a better combo? You don't have the, or you don't think you have the upside with Fitzpatrick, but does he give you the safety you need to balance out the risk of a Siwoo Kim?
Yeah. So I think if I was playing guys that I thought were safer, I'd try to find some partners that I thought were more volatile. So that's actually a really good example is Matt Fitzpatrick and Siwoo Kim. Starting that lineup gives you kind of probably a lot of leverage on the field, depending on what Siwoo comes in at. And it gives you a lot of different paths to the top. You think Fitzpatrick's going to be in the mix one way or another. If he proves me wrong and shows me a ceiling, I'm happy. And if I get Siwoo, who can always tap into it, I'm happy there as well. So it's kind of like, I don't know, a backup plan for my backup plan.
Right. And I think Siwoo's not all that risky too. I mean, he's playing some pretty good golf.
Yeah,
I know he has it.
He just does this every once in a while, right? Lose 7 strokes on approach, lose 5.5 on approach, lose 6 with the putter. There's just like, but he balances that with gain 5 off the tee, gain 8 from tee to green, gain 5 with the putter. He's just like, he's going to put up big numbers in these categories. I don't know which ones they're going to be, and I don't know if they're going to be positive or negative, but for the most part, they're going to be positive and they're going to help me.
I like it. I like that play. The more I look at it.
And he lost strokes off the tee at the Masters, which is the first time since Shriners. So, I mean, that's probably an outlier. He probably gets back to driving it well. Yeah. I mean, there's paths for Siwoo. Anybody else in the 8K range, Sia, that I can offer up to you? Maybe a Billy Horschel, maybe a Terrell Hatton. Anybody?
Hatton is interesting to me. He hasn't been great on approach as of late, but I do think he has the game for this course. I think I might throw Hatton into a couple of lineups. Like if I'm doing 15 lineups, maybe he's in one or two. I don't think I'm going to, even though I think Billy Horschel's an interesting leverage play, I don't think I'm going to get to him.
All right. Well, I'll let you kick off this $7,000 range here. I won't read them all because as usual, this is a massive range. Kokrak, McNeely, Nah, Kuchar at the top, and it goes down to CT Pan, Cam Tringale, Ricky Fowler, and Scott Stahl.
Ricky Fowler.
It's genuinely difficult to decide in this range because I think there are so many options. So I'll start just by listing a handful of names that I like. Mav McNeely, I do like. I worry a little bit that he might be popular this week, and that's fine. Again, we learned last week you can play popular players like a Cam Smith last week, for example. But I don't know that I like Mav McNeely enough to play him if he's super popular. And I say that only because I like so many other guys in the 7K range, which includes Matt Kuchar, Adam Hadwin, Tom Hoagie, Kevin Streelman, JJ Spahn. I know it's a lot of names. Russell Knox. And I'll throw kind of an outlier in there that I don't think a lot of people will play, because most of the names I said are going to be relatively popular. I think Dylan Fratelli is an interesting leverage play this week. So I'll throw him out there. And maybe a Charles Howard III as a potential leverage play.
Okay, Dylan Fratelli coming off an eighth place finish in Texas. He finished eighth here in 2020. That was a much stronger field that year. Kevin Streelman's got a couple of top 25s in a row, and he's got a handful of top 10s in recent years. So I imagine I can figure out why C is getting to these guys. Greg, who else would we prefer in this tier of salary?
I like a number of those guys. I mean, I think riding the Adam Hadwin train is probably a good idea. But the other one that Sia didn't mention who sticks out to me is Mito Pereira, who's had some really, he hasn't played here, so I don't know how he's going to do here, but he's had some really nice finishes of late, starting back at the Genesis where he was tied 15th. He was tied 13th at the Valero just a couple of weeks ago. He did lose strokes there, but before that, it was five straight gaining and some significantly. So I think his ball striking is back, and I think that's what you need around this golf course. He could be a really interesting option, and he hasn't been so hot like a Adam Hadwin, where you just can't take you can't look away. He didn't play in the Masters like a Kevin Na. He didn't come in tied fourth here last year like Mav McNeely. And maybe maybe people kind of shy away from him a little bit. So I think Mito could be kind of another safer play in a range where you're looking for some differentiation.
All right, let's just do the Adam Hadwin thing. I'll do a Freaky Friday and turn myself into Greg Ducharme. We've been tracking this approach play since the start of 2022. It is obviously much better. It has resulted in three consecutive top 10 finishes. He did not play the Masters. There is also one thing, Sia, that I don't normally look at, but weeks like this and weeks like Pebble Beach, I will. And it's the bucket of where shots are hit from. So Harbortown, because there is a lot of shorter drives, fourth shortest driving distance course on the PGA Tour, and a lot of dog legs and a lot of tree lined areas, a lot of guys hit from the same spot, 175 to 200 yards. There's twice as many shots from that range as the tour average. Adam Hadwin, amongst all the other things that he's good at, is 17th on tour in that bucket. Now, again, there's flaws with that, but combine it with all the other stuff I already liked, and I think I really like Adam Hadwin this time around.
Yeah, and if you go last 24 rounds only, he's eighth. So, I mean, I totally get that. He certainly rates out well pretty much across the board. The putter can sometimes be a problem, but he creates opportunities. He leaves it in the fairway. The approach play is pristine. It's top 10, last 24 rounds at least. I don't really see a problem with Adam Hadwin. I think Adam Hadwin actually has some outright equity as well.
Let me.
I love hearing that, by the way.
Yeah, we thought you would. Let me show you Anirban real quick. Anirban Lahiri. And I want to get your guys' opinion on this. So basically nothing for 6 months. And then he goes out, he finishes runner up at the Players Championship, T13th, the Valero Texas Open in each of his last two starts. Gains a ton of strokes in the ball striking categories in both of them. Greg, I'll start with you. When you see this, a quick, huge improvement in a very important part of the game, without knowing anything else, does this look like an outlier or the start of something?
Well, without knowing anything else, it looks like an outlier. But we do know something else. We know at the Players Championship, he added some weight to his irons.
Go ahead. Can you just send me like two rolls of lead tape? Because everything I hear is like, oh, I put some lead tape on and now I'm Tiger Woods. Just send me some of that, please, and I'll be good.
Yeah, I mean, swing weight is a huge factor in fitting. It when you go from not being able to feel where the club is to being able to feel it and it works, it's a, oh, okay. He does know how to, from an instruction standpoint, you're trying to square the face. And at the elite level, it's not like, there's nobody out here who can't control the face, but the guys who really have a good feel for it, they know where it is. It means they're going to have control over their golf ball. And he's in this unique space where this is like the JJ Spawn thing, where something flipped. You figured something out that was a problem. That's not a problem anymore. That gives you confidence. And then you see it work and it gives you even more confidence. So he's riding really high right now. And I wish this was the third week in a row. I'd be all over it if it was the third week in a row. You don't know if he came back to earth in his practice, but I'm very high on it. And this is so interesting because there's a reason for it. And when you have that reason, it does really well for players. There are countless stories of similar things to this. It could be something with the body, like it was for JJ Spawn. It could be, maybe it's a caddy change, like Scottie Scheffler, and there's a new gel. It invigorates you. So I think there's really something to Anirban Lahiri, and now he's 7,100. Guy coming off of a second and a tied 13th in his last two starts. Big fields. I mean, this is legit.
All right. I'll play him. Fine. You're twisting my arm so much here. Fine. Bottom of the 7K range. See anybody else here? I think I'm off the Aaron Wise bandwagon, which means he'll win, but we did not get the sustained putting gains that we saw in the fall much longer than that. So I think I can bid him adieu, but anybody else here in the bottom of the sevens that we might be interested in?
So a couple things. First of all, I think the Lahiri play is super smart. I'm legitimately like angry that I didn't think of that. And it's just one of those players, your eyes just gloss right past him.
Yeah.
So I think that's a really smart play. Get ahead of it. I know we don't see a big enough sample size, but at 7,100, listen, he hung tough at the Players on Sunday when things weren't really going very well. He still hung tough. I think that's really telling about his confidence, not just his game. So I really like that play. The one thing is a little staggering to me. Every once in a while, I see this. I think it was at the Players where I saw Henrik Stenson. I think he was like 6,300. And I'm like, wow, it's just so weird to see Stenson down there. Cameron Tringale. Listen, I know we don't like him anymore because he's really burned a lot of people. But at 7,000 in this field, I'm not suggesting him as a play necessarily, but you two have to admit that's a staggeringly low price for Tringale in this field.
Yeah, it's really low.
What are we doing? That's weird.
Well, the other guy at 7,000 is, I think CT Pan's kind of interesting too.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a past champion here. And I think he's hitting the ball pretty well of late. Finishes have been a little inconsistent, but he comes back to a place he likes, striking it well. I could be interested in that. But Cameron Tringale, I know what you mean. The form isn't necessarily great, but could be sneaky.
I mean, he's three starts removed from a 13th place finish. He's six starts removed from a third. I will say this. So he's 7,000 this week. That's the cheapest he's been. So he was also 7,000 at Summit Club in October. But if you exclude that, he's not been this cheap since the 2021 Phoenix Open. So that's 14 months ago.
Yeah. And I mean, you scroll down. I'm curious when he came back for the Summit Club, he had been on a long layoff, if I recall, but I might be completely wrong there.
He played Shriners. He played the 2 weeks before. No, he played.
Okay. Fair enough.
He's never made the cut here, which just brings up the question relates to everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
How much do you factor in course history here?
He also
hasn't played in a while.
And he's he's been like the most improved golfer twice since then. Remember?
Yeah, it's a good point.
When Steve Stricker won most improved 2 years in a row?
Yeah, back to back comeback player of the year.
Was it comeback player of the year? Was it most improved comeback?
It was comeback. Yeah.
That's wild.
Crazy. I don't know how that's possible. They don't have the award anymore.
Yeah, because there's no integrity to the award.
That's absurd.
Back to back years.
What are you doing?
Shameful. $6,000 range. Starts with Carlos Ortiz, Charlie Hoffman, Danny Willett, Doug Gim, Mackenzie Hughes. Goes down to, oh my gosh, there's a lot of guys min price this week. Let me think of some notables here. William McGirt, Morgan Hoffman back in action, Kevin Tway, James Pyatt, he's the amateur we saw last week, James Hahn, Chesson Hadley, Brian Gay, all included in a fairly sizable $6,000 range. What do you see out of this tier of golfer, Greg?
The first guy I'm drawn to is Nate Lashley. I think he's been playing a lot better golf than a lot of guys in this range. He came in tied 7th at the Puerto Rico Open, tied 27th at the Valspar, tied 18th at the Valero Texas Open. So he really has my interest. But at that price with some really good form, I mean, that's a sign of confidence to me. His only start here is a missed cut, unfortunately. Emiliano Grillo, he has my interest because I know the potential's there. He's coming off of 2 missed cuts, but I like that price, and it feels like a golf course he could really excel at and have some luck. Matthew Neesmith, a fan favorite here, one start tied 3rd.
What's the world famous Matthew Neesmith comment that we will hear 1,000 times this week? You know it, Greg. Come on, bud. Come on, bud. You're in the business. You know it, Greg.
I don't think I do.
You know it, Greg.
Is this the one where he proposed to his wife on the 18th?
Oh. Proposed to his wife on the 18th green at Harbortown.
Yeah.
That's right. That's the
one. So, I mean, maybe that's Sia's narrative. Players who have proposed to their wife on an 18th green.
If you can find 5 more, I'd be impressed.
I clearly couldn't find any, so I guess I missed that one.
You could do an all proposal lineup if you throw. Well, I can. You would have John Rahm at Torrey Pines, right?
Yep. Mm. What else we got?
That's 2. I am kind of blanked out there.
Where'd you propose, Greg?
At a
Trader Joe's.
Yeah. Yeah, it was at aisle 3 of the local grocery store.
Once a year when he goes in.
We go there for our anniversary. No, I proposed at a family gathering, which was pretty cool.
Oh, because it was actually there, you could just like celebrate right away.
Yeah. And it wasn't just a family gathering. It was actually my now wife's baby shower. Mm. So she was pregnant at the time and with our oldest Mac. And I didn't know what I was going to do. I had a lot of debate about it. And both of our friends was like, I think it's a good idea.
I think it's
one of those things you don't know. Like, does that spoil the, but you're right. Everybody was there. It was like a merger party.
And if something is kind of a good idea, you got to jump right into it. That's what
Well, I mean, it's better than doing something lame. There's at least a little pizzazz there, but anyway, I got one other guy.
Please.
Hudson Swafford. He has my interest this week.
Yeah. Hopefully he's got his PXGs all figured out and the heads can stay on this time around.
But yeah. That was crazy. Wild.
First of all, he hit that ball like 230 yards as the head flew off of it.
I know. And he was like, his reaction was hysterical.
He acted like it was the like biggest, most obscene thing that could have ever happened to him.
Yeah, he couldn't handle it. It had me crack it up. But he's been playing all right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he played well. 30th last week, has made a couple of cuts in a row. Obviously, he won earlier in the year. Where did he win at? American Express.
Yeah.
Okay. See ya. I've got 2 guys. Joel Damon is $6,800. Keeps the ball in play. I like that. I think you need it this week. And I'm willing to run. I want one more week with Bo Hostler. Finished 4th in Texas. He's got like 3 top 20s in his last 4 starts. If you look at kind of the similarities between Harbor Town and Pebble Beach, which is short, small greens, kind of natural landing areas. He's got a good crossover at Pebble. I got to run him out there one more time and see what happens.
I totally agree. He's one of the guys I have written down here. I like Hassler. I like Joel Dahman as well. Lashley made it to my list. Matthew Naismith made it to my list. A few other guys to mention that are in the lower range. I wanted to look into Brendan Todd. I will mention that. I'm really impressed with the eighth place finish at the Valero Texas Open. I think he's a great course fit here specifically. I do want to caution with Brendan Todd that, and I see the 39th place finish in 2021, but the caution is he did gain over 4 strokes putting at the Valero Texas Open. But in his defense, the other metrics were actually pretty good.
And in his defense,
and like, he's a great putter.
Yeah, that's his thing.
Like, oh no, that's true. That's a good point. But I'm just saying, like if it was all putting and it was nothing else, that would be one thing. But it actually wasn't all putting. So I just wanted to point that out there. I think he's an interesting play. We see that approach play. Maybe, you know, over the last two tournaments has been pretty good. So he's completely fallen off the map. This would be the course for him to kind of put himself back on the map, in my opinion. Another few names, Doc Redman, Adam Svensson. These guys are very cheap, very low priced. Wesley Bryan, you know, the guy who was just recently fighting for his card. The approach play has bounced back a little bit for Wesley Bryan. The off the tee play is not good. But again, if you're going to get away with that, it might be here. And somebody pointed this guy out to me on Twitter earlier today, and his approach play is so amazing. Wait. But his putting is like straight out of the Kyle Stanley school of putting. Does anybody want to guess?
I actually think I know, but is it
6,100?
Bryson Nimmer?
No.
I know who it is.
Who is
Nick Waddy?
No. Good guesses. The answer is check out Henrik Norlander.
I should have known that.
The approach play,
6,100.
Used to be like there was a 6-event stretch where he was that guy in DFS. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, here you go.
Yeah, very good.
Unfortunately, it's oh god, he gives it up on the greens, doesn't he?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it right back.
Oh my, and then some in most cases.
I think
look at Watney's approach though. That's been really good lately.
Okay.
I just found it's very similar in a strange way. And I just looked at it because I was guessing.
Yeah. Multiple strokes on approach in 3 of his last 4 gained as well at the API, T20, T30. I've seen worse. Basically, Henrik Norlander's profile. I've seen that was worse recently. Let me look up this Nimmer guy because he's like a Korn Ferry. I bet you I don't have a ton of rounds on him or a ton of like measured rounds on him. But he, let's see.
Looks like you got 2.
Yeah, I've got like 6. Yeah, Palmetto, he made the cut, but that was, geez, that's coming up on a year ago. This event last year, he lost 5.5 off the tee. Yeah, I don't have a lot of rounds on him.
And that means we don't play him.
That would be tough. Wesley Bryan must be in on sponsor as a past champ, right? Because he did not get his card.
Right. I mean, he has some sort of conditional status, I believe, or partial status, right?
And because he won here, I'm sure they hooked him up with a sponsor invite.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we can do the narrative lineup.
Actually, yeah. So I mentioned one of the guys in the narrative lineup. So this is the RBC Heritage, right? So you guys know what RBC stands for? Anyone?
Royal Bank of Canada.
So we have the O Canada All Canadian lineup, right?
Wow. All right.
Which features 6 Canadians. I think there are 7 in the field, mind you. So you can switch one out. Yeah, please guess.
Corey Connors.
Correct.
Adam Hadwin.
All right. 2.
Both of them. Mac Hughes as well.
Mac Hughes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Svensson.
Right. 3 more. 2 if you want to make a lineup. 3 more technically that I found.
Hold on.
We said Svensson. Nick Taylor.
Okay. Nick Taylor. There's more on Nick Taylor, so just wait on
that. No, there's one that I think technically I'd be right on, but I don't think he plays under the flag. Jason Kokrak.
Oh, interesting.
Isn't Kokrak, wasn't he born in, I'll look it up.
Well, might have been.
Hey, is Pendrith in the field?
He's not.
Okay.
Good. Yeah, good. I mean, he's certainly Canadian. The other two, we've mentioned one of these guys a couple times, Roger Sloan, Canadian. Yeah, and Michael Gligic is also. So
right.
If you wanted to leave Michael out of it because it's hard to pronounce his name, also because he rates out the worst of the seven, your lineup would be Adam Hadwin, Corey Connors, Mackenzie Hughes, Nick Taylor, Adam Svensson, Roger Sloan. In my opinion, not a bad lineup.
No.
So here's the deal, though. Strokes gain narrative. Nick Taylor actually breaks the model here. Okay, so first of all, Royal Bank of Canada.
Yeah.
So he's on the Canadian team, right? Nick Taylor's on the Canadian team. It's Royal Bank of Canada. His last name, if you take the T away, you can spell the word Royal. Pretty great, right?
Yes.
The CEO of the Royal Bank of Canada between 1986 and 1994, a man by the name of Alan Taylor, shares Nick Taylor's last name.
Jeez.
That time frame, 86 to 94, that's when Nick Taylor was born. He was born in 1988. Oh, and guess what day Nick Taylor was born on?
April 11th.
Wrong. Even better, the first day of the RBC Heritage takes place on April 14th. He was born April 14th, 1988. So you've got the Royal, you've got the CEO, Alan Taylor, you've got April 14th, 1988, you've got the Canadian in him. Oh, by the way, born in Winnipeg. I don't know how you steer clear of one Nick Taylor.
See, how do you get to the CEO of, like, what leads you down?
He really has too much time on his hands, obviously.
Here's the thing. The JD after my name comes into play sometimes. The one thing I'm good at, and it's the one thing, is meaningless in-depth research. And that's what I get to do for my narrative lineups.
So what did you search? Like, who are the former CEOs of Royal Canadian Bank of Canada?
I think he just goes to the RBC Bank's wiki page and starts control F things that would make sense. 1988, like whatever.
Rick is very close, but Rick is very close. But the idea that I would actually find a CEO that happened to be a Taylor as well, some of this you just fall into luck because of that meaningless research, but it does typically start with things such as Wikipedia, but I can't give all my secrets away. The birthday thing really just blew the whole thing away. Like, this was going to be a good narrative, notwithstanding the birthday part. The idea that he's actually born on April 14th, that's in that time frame that Alan Taylor was the CEO, it's just too much. Which, of course, is why he's one of... Go ahead.
Is he an actual RBC rep as well? Do we know that? Greg, does he wear the logo?
I don't know.
Now, images.
He might, but
he
I...
Does. He does.
He does.
Well, he at least did when he won. He was wearing it when he won at Pebble Beach. So at one point, and he at least did at one point. I do not know if he still does, but I would imagine he.
So is this former CEO, Alan Taylor, his dad?
No, man. If he was related, I don't know what I would have done with myself. Sure?
Like, do we know it's not?
I mean, it's just getting too wild.
I'm pretty sure. Believe me, I went the extra step to find out.
Nick, I know your father.
I know the names of Alan R. Taylor's kids because I had to like vet this out as much as possible. It like got weird for a second.
I wanted to see who he was playing with next week at the Zurich. He's not playing the Zurich. Okay. Wow. All right. That's great. I will confirm Jason Kokrak, born in North Bay, Ontario, Canada. So Canadian
option.
I don't know when he moved because he plays under the U.S. flag. His sporting nationality, American. Interesting. I mean, I don't know how we're going to top it, but anything else before we get out of here?
I'm not following that.
Okay, see ya. Go have at it, friend.
I mean, I can't listen. There's wind at play here. I don't know what tee times are going to be best, but let me give you some first round leaders. And that's going to be capped off, of course, by Nick Taylor. By the way, we had that thing surrounded last week. I think of the three of the five that I picked, I think three of them were in like the top six after day one. So we were super close, but
last week was, I got all my sheets of paper here. Oh, I didn't write them down last week. Oh, because you tweeted them out, right?
Right, but I said three on the show. I think it was Neiman, DJ, and somebody else that I said on the show, and then I added two more. So we're going to go with Alex Noren at 50-1, Adam Hadwin at 65-1, Kevin Streelman at 75-1, Tom Hoagie at 75-1, and of course, the birthday boy, Nick Taylor, at 130-1. For the record, it is a strokes gain narrative play on Nick Taylor, but the approach play hasn't been bad for him, and he's a shorter player. Like, this is actually a pretty good course fit for Nick Taylor. So even though he's kind of a fringy first-round leader play, I think at 130-1, it actually might be worth it.
Now I'm just
I love it
in a Nick Taylor just like wormhole right now.
Yeah. Rick, you got to add a column on rickrungood.com. That's just NAR at the top. And it's just color, no numbers, just colors. Nick Taylor would be as dark green as there possibly is.
Sia sends me his narrative rankings every week, and I just import him into the website. All right. Well, there you go. We've got our winner. We've got our first round leaders. We've got everything that you need. We'll be back on Tuesday for the Mega Preview Pod, and then obviously round by round recaps after each and every final putt drops. The link for the fan vote to the one and done is live right now. Get it in because we're going live on Tuesday morning and we need your pick by then. Check the description. Big thanks to producer Jacob. Does all the hard work behind the scenes. Sia Najad is available on Twitter at Sia Najad, and Greg Ducharme is available at The Real GFD. You can find me at Rick Run Good. This has been The First Cut and we'll catch you next time.
The time has come for drag queens to save the world.
RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars is back on Paramount Plus, and for the first time ever,
I want you to use your talent for good,
for a change.
8 iconic queens are competing for the charity of their choice.
This is how you do drag.
Who will slay it forward, win cash for their favorite cause, and a coveted spot in the Drag Race Hall of Fame? RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars, new season now streaming exclusively on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.